This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Also sponsored by Windstar Farm. Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you once again, along with the pontiff of the Pick Four. That's Jude Feld. We are back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios for tonight's program, and we want to welcome everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and of course, everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, on your smartphone, or on your tablet. It's all there at horseracingradio.net. Every week, we have the opportunity to visit with so many of the people that make our sport a success, and every week, I tell you, that I'm talking about the trainers of our business. And Jude is a former trainer. I know that you have enjoyed these shows thoroughly because you get to hear the different ways that people get into this sport and the ways that they've been able to reach the pinnacles that they are now.
Yeah, everybody's got a story, and the backstories are great. And then you learn their philosophy. And then you hear about their misery too, which all trainers go through time and time again sometimes. But it's a great game, and one that I love. And I loved training horses when I was a trainer. I trained for 20 years and I had a great time doing it. So it's a great life if you don't weaken. So we're happy to interview these people and put a face to the name that you see in the program or the racing form.
Well, as you wrote in your Eclipse Award-winning piece, if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah.
And that really does sum up what training horses is all about.
Yeah, that was kind of fun when I wrote that, and it just flowed out of me. It was one of the quickest things I ever wrote. It took me about 20 minutes, and it just came out of me like sweat out of your pores, you know? It was an unbelievable experience, and I was very pleased to win that award with G.D. Hieronymus for Keeneland, and surprised at the same time because it wasn't a very long piece, but a lot of people liked it.
Well, tonight we welcome the 30-year-old native of Kentucky, that is Stephen Lister. He has saddled 44 winners in his very young career, and he is one of the true up-and-coming stars in the sport. And Stephen, in studio with us here on Trainer Talk this evening. Really do appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, excited to sit down with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And I know you've told me on multiple occasions that you're a fan of the show. You take time to go back and listen to some of the other trainers.
I've listened to most all of them. There's a lot of time on the road, Indiana Downs, Ellis Park. Yeah, it's a good time, Pastor. Enjoyed watching and hear it.
Well, for you, training horses is just somewhat in your pedigree, I guess. Is that a good way to say it?
Oh, yeah. My father was a trainer, and I grew up around the racetrack. We had his broodmare farm. Started out, he managed my uncle's farm, Ashley Farm in Versailles, and finally broke off on our own. And he had it pretty tough. He was managing farms and training at the same time, and wasn't around a lot when we were little, but still made plenty of effort to be around us and do all the important things fathers do. It's pretty, now sitting where I am in my career and looking back, see what he did compared to what I'm doing, it's pretty admirable. But sometimes I feel like I was set up and pushed around to join this thing. I didn't have a choice. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, but your dad wasn't thrilled about you making the decision to become a horse trainer.
He was not. He loved the idea, because when we first came back to training, off the farm, he loved the idea of being around me at the racetrack. He loved teaching, so that was fun. But then, most relationships don't last. Marriages are tough to hold. Families are tough to keep together, and he knows all that. He almost went through a lot of that, a lot of those troubles, and he didn't want to see the same thing for me or worse. So he tried to steer me clear of it, and go on to do probably bigger and better things, but you know, just couldn't help it. Just wanted to go to the racetrack every day.
Yeah, once it gets in your blood, it's hard to get out. And you're 100% correct about, you know, the marriages and the family life. It's so hard to balance all those things. People don't understand why you can't go to a barbecue on Saturday or Sunday, you know, and then Monday and Tuesday when there's nothing going on, you know, you get to spend time with your kids, but they're at school, and it's just it's a nightmare sometimes.
I don't think I had the full grasp of that before I started. You're just in too deep. But no, it's a lot of fun. I love it. I don't know what else I would do if it wasn't training, so. You know, we're going to give it our full effort.
And as you alluded to, your dad, Warren, trained horses for quite some time and trained 89 winners of his own, retired in the mid-90s, made a bit of a short comeback in 2009, 2010, which we'll talk about. But I want to go back to his farm, Tarleton Farm, out by Paris, Kentucky. And you grow up working around your dad's operation there, working on the farm. Take me back to being a kid and just being around it. What's that like?
I'd say around being a kid, we grew up, we had two ponies as babysitters. We didn't have a lot of money. My brother and I, we would ride all day when my father worked. He would have us do a couple things when we were little. So that was kind of a interesting, fun way to grow up. Not a lot of kids get to do that. Then we got a little older, and he worked our fingers to the bone. he'll admit that. You know, he's tough. He taught us to work. It's probably one of the best things he ever taught me was what hard work really was. And a lot of it comes easier now. But, you know, I got everything from sales experience off that farm to just proper horse care. You know, we fold out hundreds of horses. Really hit on most aspects of the industry right off that farm. It's pretty incredible what you can do with a job on the farm. But it was a good part of my life. I learned a lot. He taught me a lot. You know, the horsemanship was always pretty good in our family. You didn't mess with dad's equipment. That you want to see him pop, that's where you go to do that. But it was fun.
Talk about that commitment and from the time you're young, getting up every morning, taking care of the horses, that kind of thing, you know, how that's carried over to your training.
It was actually the reason why I moved out of the house 2 days after graduation. It was always one more thing, but before you go to bed, before you leave, before you go to your ball game, it's always, hey, we need help, one more thing. But it's a major commitment. You sacrifice your families, your weekends, holidays, like you say, it's an unbelievable commitment. It's your life. But on the farm, it's a little different than the racetrack. You can almost feel like you can get away from the racetrack just, you know, for a day or two if you have good assistance. And you're able to go see more, like go to different racetracks. You go to sales company, you're always on the move, and that part's a little better because you always get to see something else. But the farm, you're on the farm, and that was one thing, that reason that I wanted to stay going to training, that path, because I liked the action, I liked moving, I liked I didn't like to be stuck in one spot. So but you know, I got my roots from the farm. That was, it ended up being a great thing.
You've mentioned going to school on a couple of different occasions, and that was something that I know your family was very adamant about, that you were going to attend school. You had other interests besides horse racing. Tell me about some of those.
College was tough for me. Still working 40 hours a week, trying to go to school, trying to be 18 and have a girlfriend or two. And so, you know, that was tough. And I was always, I paid my way through college, paid my bills. It's one of the best things I think my father did for me. And you know, when you have to skip 2 to 3 weeks of class to go make a living at the sales and do those kinds of, so you can pay your way, it made it tough. And I probably could have did a little better than what I did. But actually, I had different plans. I was really interested in flying. we have an amazing, most loyal client ever that started Netchester, you know, Richard Santulli, and always thought about knocking on his door. But after I got through flight school, and actually I screwed up and I pinhooked a horse, a weanling to a yearling, a broken vow, and made a decent amount of money. It was just too easy. You know, it's so it's stayed in it, bought a couple more. I had one of my father's friends come along, 20% on all everything we bought, and you know, I had fun doing it. And you know, next thing I know, I'm 6-7 years later, I'm training horses.
Stephen Lister, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Back to the flying thing for a minute, because you mentioned being so interested in that. You were accepted into Pan Am's pilot training program at one point, right?
Correct. I was.
And turned that down.
Well, a part of it was when I finally looked up how much it cost to go there. That was a part of it. And I'm sitting here with cash from a horse I sold and a big tuition bill. You know, let's just go buy another horse and give it a shot. But that was really the start and end of my pilot career, was one letter.
Are you still interested in flying?
Oh, I love flying. You know, if I ever had the time, which I guarantee I won't, I would love to go get my own pilot's license just to say I did it. But I like all that kind of stuff.
That's a very expensive hobby too.
We're gonna have to have some nice race horses.
yeah Even if you got a hand-me-down plane from NetJets, it'd still be very expensive.
Some nice horses we'd have to have. So
did you ever talk with Richard Santulli about it?
I never did.
Yeah.
You know, Rich is so so loyal, so good to our family. I mean, from every aspect of just being friends and being probably one of the best clients we've ever had as a family. I'm sure he would have given me every opportunity that I deserved. So,
you know, you also mentioned the college education, but I don't know if you mentioned the school. You went to the University of Kentucky,
yes,
which makes a lot of sense because you grow up here in the heart of the bluegrass. You still follow the Wildcats?
I recruiting, everything. Yeah, I know. Oh, big fan.
Go to all the games?
I wish I could. I go to everyone I'm can attend, try to get tickets. My uncle and my cousin Gray Lister, they have really good seats, so they spoiled me. So I don't want to go past the fifth row anymore. But, but that's not in my pocketbook. But I'm a diehard fan. Love UK basketball, UK football.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. I mean, we have friends. We have a friend that lives in France, and she's often emailing me or sending me a text or something. Where can I listen to the game? Where can I watch the game? I'm you know, I'm on this island, I'm here, I'm there. And Fanny Sam, and then she's a diehard fan, and she's, you know, a French citizen. So it's everywhere you go in the country. Mike and I have met some unbelievable people in bars and things in Florida and other places. UK's playing, the income, the t-shirts, the jerseys, they're everywhere, UK fans.
Oh, I've gotten a few elbows from the wife on Saturday weddings checking score.
So. Yeah, that's
you almost
happen.
Have to, if you're living here in Kentucky and you're
that's
born
right.
and raised here like you, it really is a religion, right?
Oh, absolutely. It you know, it's something to look forward to every day that's not your job. So.
Yeah,
I thought it was funny when I first moved here, I didn't realize it, but you could actually wear your UK garb to church and nobody would look at you strangely.
It's expected, actually.
Actually, especially if there's a rare Sunday appearance, right?
I'm waiting for the priests to start going with blue and white vestments.
Yeah, they probably would do that if somebody would spring for them.
Stephen, tell me about your Uncle Wayne. It's not just your dad, Warren, who's involved, but tell me about your uncle.
We're always close ever since I was born. You know, I lived on his farm first couple of years of my life. Grew up with his two sons, Brian and Gray Lister, and his daughter, Meredith. You know, I've gotten really close with them after college. But Wayne actually had my first winner for me as a trainer, a little Stormy Atlantic filly named Miss Woods. He's going to kill me for telling this story, but we ran her for 50, I think, a maiden 50. I can't remember, 50 or 30, one of the two. And, you know, I called the racing office. There's a maiden special that came up at Churchill Downs on Belmont Day, which usually is tough. And they say, hey, you know, we only have six horses in here. You want to take a shot? I said, yeah, let's put her in. And, you know, this is at the very beginning stage of my career. So my dad fielded the phone call there. And, you know, I think Wayne thought we were nuts. But, you know, he is very supportive no matter what we do. So, you know, we got lucky, went off the long shot 17-1 and won one turn mile at Churchill. And it was a pretty awesome way to break your maiden as a trainer at Churchill Downs on Belmont Day. You know, I was doing backflips.
Yeah, well, you should have been.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's great to run in those big days and you know, everybody's out at the track and
yeah,
and but just winning your first race is off the hook.
We were in the grandstand, and this is what I was getting to with the story. They, you know, we were all high-fiving and having a great time, and you know, we knew my uncle wasn't great with it, and we didn't really want to go into that race. And soon as it was over, one of his friends came up, hey, did you like that one? And he goes, hey, we liked that one all the way.
You know? Yeah, he had to be happy with the result.
He's never going to let anybody else know, but it's something I've always looked back and laughed on a little bit. It was a fun moment.
He spent some time as chairman of the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission too, didn't he?
Yeah, he's done a lot for this industry, in my opinion. You know, from the way that I view my uncle, he's very straightforward. I think he's right on most of the things he says and can say them very directly towards you, which some people like, some people don't. But, you know, I think he's done a lot for this industry.
How much different is your uncle's style from your dad's?
I'd say completely.
Yeah?
Completely. You know, I never worked around Wayne as much, with the exception of training a couple horses for him. And he was always good with me with training. I think he was harder on my dad and Rusty Arnold's, and I think I got a little slack. But maybe Muffy Lister had a little something to do with that. But, you know, my dad was pretty laid back. Like I said, as long as you didn't mess with his equipment, he would, you know, he was a good teacher. You know, I spent a ton of time with my dad, and it was some of the best years of my life. And as far as styles, I don't know. Wayne has run a little bigger operation. I was always into making a few more deals, and Dad and I were always more to just stay on the farm and do what we could with the horses we had.
Yeah, it takes a lot to be, you know, on the horse racing board and very proactive politically and that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. And yeah. Farm life is a whole different kettle of fish. So you can see just by the career paths that they would probably be a lot different.
Oh, it's I'm sure it was exhausting for them. Yeah. I'm on the board of the KTA, and we just meet a couple times a year and talk. Gotten pretty close with Chauncey Morris, and I think he's a great individual. And even that stuff. Yeah, I mean, you want to stay up to date and give all the best advice that you can give. But then you got to go train horses and have a family as well.
Yeah.
So I could see that being exhausting for him.
Well, of course, you're dealing with that now. You just recently had a new baby, your mm-hmm. first one, right?
21 days ago.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And excited. What's that like for you, trying to balance everything you're doing with the profession with now having a young one at home?
Well, it's been easy, only because of family. My wife is great. She takes care of, I don't think that baby slept a wink last night, and she took care of it for me. She, you know, had a big day, you know, coming in here to have the race, the sale. I mean, we got to be everywhere today. So her family lives just a couple blocks away, and they are a huge impact on our lives. They help out with everything. And my family as well. You know, I thought the first weekend when we had the baby, I was running, I think it was 7 different horses in 5 different states, one in a grade one at Kingland. I was buying a house. you know, just had to be everywhere. and that was extremely stressful. But as a trainer, you put it together a good team, and it ends up working out. You just do a lot of pacing back and forth, especially in the hallway when you're about to have a baby, wondering where all your horses are and what they're doing.
Yeah, Laz Barrera told me one time that whenever you have a baby, you go on a hot streak. So, and I found that to be true. Every time I had a kid, I started winning races. So get ready.
I need to go get the condition book in or some of these things.
Yeah, drop everything and win.
Was your wife involved in the business when you met her?
Never.
Really?
Still isn't today. You know, she's a NICU nurse, University of Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
Family's never had horses. She's never been that interested in horses. She loves coming out to the races. She loves coming to the barn and petting a few, and then she's done.
Yeah.
Which might be a very good reason why our relationship's so successful. I have my one area where I get to be the boss, and she has everything else.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, because so many trainers have come on the program that have met their wives through the horse racing mm-hmm. industry, and they've said that that's a huge reason for their success, because their wife then understands what's involved with the sacrifices a trainer has to make. But on your case,
that was
it's
a little
different.
Tough in the beginning, which I think it is for any relationship. But she didn't know, and I tried to. We were together before I started training, and I tried to warn her to the best of my knowledge, like, hey, this is 7 days a week. This is, you know, it's all day, every day. Clients' horses come first. And that's hard for anybody to truly accept when that time comes. But, you know, she's a fabulous person. I'm lucky to, I'd really hit the jackpot there. So, she makes it life easy in that regard.
Stephen Lister here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. You mentioned your team. When mm-hmm. you go to your website, StephenListerRacing.com. You have a team page that lists a few other
individuals. I probably need to update that.
Are there some new ones on there?
Well, that's a part of, you know, you got a million things to do. I need to go. It's been a while. But, you know, actually, we have a new hire I'm really excited about, is Cheryl Andrews. She was Charlie Lepresti's assistant, went through the whole Wise Dan era. And she was also my father's assistant when I was a kid. And she taught me how to ride, and man, she's got 30 years experience on me. It's, you know, it's exciting to have somebody in the barn where you don't have to walk in and teach or tell her what to do. She knows how the barn's supposed to operate, and it makes it a world of difference. I have another girl at High Point named Melissa. She's fabulous, a good horse girl. You know, she's tough. They're tough. They run it. Also, probably one of the biggest parts of my team is probably my brother and his wife, Emma Lister, Mac and Emma Lister. They have a hauling business where they take all these horses from trainers, and they'll go saddle them. But, you know, he takes care of everything. I don't have to worry about paper, silks. You know, it's just put them in their hands, and you're golden. So, I mean, when you're having a kid and running in six different states and they take care of it, it's a great advantage to have.
Yeah, that's awesome to have somebody that can do the whole nine yards.
It's the same background
shop.
I do.
Yeah.
You know, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And huge. The trust factor, because, you know, whenever you ship a horse out of town, it's always touch and go, no matter who you are. I'm sure Pletcher has a few sleepless nights over it. And
oh, yeah.
He's got the best help in the world. So.
I'd say my brother's harder on my help than I am. So it's, you know, it's a great thing.
It's good. They're glad to have the boss back.
That's right.
That's a complete opposite direction from when you first started your operation. You were doing everything on your own.
Oh, everything. Actually, my brother was a big help to me in the beginning, and my father. But when I first took off on my own and we all parted ways, it was tough. You know, you have to do a lot on your own. And I didn't have the same background as a lot of trainers do. I never had an assistant's job anywhere else. Part of me wishes I did. Parts of me are glad I didn't, but, you know, I felt like I just grew up too fast. Had a wife, had a kid, had a house. You know, I felt like traveling for somebody else wasn't the right thing to do, so I just kept plugging away at what I was doing. And, you know, I would go to 8 to 10 horses, get back down to 2 or 3 horses. And, you know, you get tough, you fill out your application, your resume about a million times throughout your career. But, you know, I found that just kept working hard and surrounding myself with the right people, which was huge, you know, has at least gotten me to this point.
Well, it's hard to get clients on your own. I think one of the big advantages these days of working for a guy like Pletcher or Brown or whatever, and you get contacts because it's so hard when you're training horses to be out meeting people. And of course, you know, you don't want to pick on somebody else's customers. But nowadays with simulcasting, the owners don't go to the races as much. A lot of people stay home, watch them on TV. So it's really hard to make those connections. And you really almost have to do it through results, which is unfortunate because people don't, you know you. They don't know your style. They don't know what you can do for them. And it's really hard to get that word out. I think it's one of the beauties of this program, you know, is the fact that people can actually listen to what somebody has to say and go, that guy kind of has my philosophy. Maybe I should call him and give him a horse.
Yeah, we can't tell you how many times we've received an email or a Twitter reply, or I've run into somebody at a horse sale and it'll be an owner. Mm-hmm. And so many times it's a new owner that just gets into the sport and they're looking for that trainer that fits their personality. And they've heard the interviews that we've done here on Trainer Talk, and they will say, you know, that's how I hired my new trainer, because of what I heard on your program, and they liked the philosophy, and it falls into lockstep of what they're trying to achieve.
It's the results, you're right, is a big part of it. Word of mouth, I've gotten 100% of my clients all by word of mouth. I've never been good at going out and asking or searching. I would be in trouble if I had to Google and find a phone number. You know, so I've been lucky in that regards, and like I said, surrounding myself with the right people, you get to meet other people, which has really helped. I never forget my first client, actually my cousin Gray Lister, recommended me, a guy named Jody Mudd. He's a professional golfer. He's one of the most wonderful men I've ever met in my life. And he had sent me his filly before I had met him. And I just got kicked out of Kingland for the September sale. Had to be gone for 5 weeks. And so I shipped my three horses up to Turfway, which one of them was Miss Woods, my first winner, that hadn't happened yet. And the other one was in lingerie, and Jody Mudd's filly. And he walked in, and I had a three-horse stable. I was stable next to Steve Margolis. I had flowers. I had the webbings all wiped down. I mean, it couldn't have, I don't think I've ever had a cleaner shed room than at that period. And he walks in, and we had a couple of rough neighbors. Some parts of some of these racetracks can get a little rough, and they started screaming and hollering, and sitting here thinking, that's great, my first client ever. Walks in, and he's going to walk right out. And, you know, the guy grabbed me, and he patted me on the shoulder. He goes, it's all right, Steven, don't worry about it. You know, we'll get back to King and everything will be fine. And I didn't do any good with that filly, and I kept Jody for years. We bought him a couple. We won a few races. Even did some broodmare stuff together. I've done everything but have a golf lesson from the guy. I need one. You know, we talk every couple of months. He's just a wonderful guy.
Steven Lister here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. We will come back and continue this visit. We'll talk more about some of the other people that helped him along the way, and we'll look back on some of his top horses he's had the privilege to be around. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasic Tipton November sale annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. Over the past 10 years, 142 fillies and mares have brought prices over $1 million, and 3 world records have been broken. Last year, the Fasic Tipton November sale sold 23 seven-figure fillies and mares, more than any other mixed sale in the world, with an average sale price far greater than our nearest competitor. The world's premier breeding stock event, November 1st, 2015 at Fasic Tipton. Where will you be?
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver. Russell Meyer,
what a finish to the classic. And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
And they're off to New York, the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Don't miss Maryland's Day at the Races on Saturday, October 17th at Laurel Park. Come celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, a celebration of Maryland's horses and lots of fun for all ages. First race is at 12:15 with 11 exciting races. Great entertainment on the track and a collector's cap, too. Don't miss out on the fun at Laurel Park on Saturday, October 17th. For more information, visit MarylandMillion.com or MarylandRacing.com.
Start now with your Kale Density Mare and Foal Feeding Program. Sales results were obvious at this year's Keeneland September Yearling Sale. Yearlings produced from mares fed Kale Density through their formative year were impressive, as well as horses trained and raced in 2014 and so far in 2015. Clean radiographs, conformity, strong bones, and overall health was the big winner at auction and on the track. Order your plan today at KaleDensity.com or call 877-744-9006 for more information.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
In lingerie, fourth toward the inside, three lengths off the lead. Mystical Star has to angle wide from fifth, now fourth. Still four lengths from the front. Kitty in a tizzy behind her. The defending champion, Aruna, seven lengths off the lead, looking for running room in behind horses. Mystical Star coming after Star Former. Kitty in a tizzy and Aruna on the grandstand side. Mystical Star to the lead in lingerie. Tries to get Shook Loose behind her. Star Former's down toward the inside. Mystical Star has a short lead in lingerie. Then Star Former back toward the rail. The rest have work to do in lingerie. Past the 16th pole, Johnny Velasquez aboard in lingerie, drawing clear in the closing strides to take the Judmont Spinster.
In lingerie, so impressive in winning the Grade 1 Spinster. That was one of several big races for In Lingerie, who started her career with our guest here this evening on Trainer Talk. That is indeed Stephen Lister. We'll continue this visit here in the second half of the program, but want to welcome everybody back and remind you that if you did miss any portion of this show, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast of this show and all of our shows available for you right there on our website and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And really enjoyed that first half of the program and looking forward to this second half as well. And Stephen, we look back on that performance by In Lingerie, and I know that you didn't have her at that point in your career. She was already purchased by our friend Aaron Wellman at Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. But to watch her have the success she did after you had a hand in getting her started, that had to be a thrill.
Oh, absolutely, especially since I bet her hard that day.
That always helps.
Oh, yeah, she was... you know, the freakiest filly I've ever had. She's fast, looked like a racehorse. You know, she. I probably learned more from that horse than I have any other horses that I've trained, simply because she was very tough to be around, especially in the beginning stages. Actually, I have a good little story I'll tell on her. We spent a couple weeks with her in the field, the backfields at Kingland. Just because, you know, she was always bouncing around. It made life difficult for your rider, groom, everybody. I think a storm cat came out in her a little bit. But, you know, we took her to track first day, and this is going into the winter at Kingland, and all the backside was shut down. It was only Rice Road open, so there's nobody back there. And she jogged around that track twice perfectly, and that's all we were going for, is just to have a good experience. And she stood out right when I was sitting there thinking to myself, hey, this is worked out okay. And then she dumps the rider, takes off. You know, is pretty easy, and ends up in the barn area, and had to chase her down on foot. And finally, Rogers Beasley, the director of racing at Kingland, and Dewey Harper helped me trap her up by the grandstand. Is where we ended up catching her. And Rogers looked at me and said, whose filly is that? And I said, I don't know. I'll find out for you. And I grabbed her and walked her back to the barn. But she, you know, my father would sit there with me, and I would, because my father owned her. We ended up getting her from Richard Santulli at the September sale. She was very immature, and she was a little sickle hawk. You know, she really wasn't that impressive to look at as a yearling. She really just grew into a really nice looking racehorse. And we had given her plenty of time, didn't rush her right out of the gate. So, you know, that, as far as that's concerned, it really all worked out for the filly. But my father would always, I remember, one of the best things he ever, that stuck with me the most, was when he would sit there and look and point at a filly and go, Steven, these fillies are tough. You got to get inside their head. You got to know what they're doing. You know, basically insinuating preventing tie-ups, preventing problems, knowing what they're going to do before they do them. And it really helps. It's more of a focused reminder. Like, you got to just stop and look at this filly, what's she doing, how's she acting, is she eating, who's got her, is she like, you know, there's a million different things. And I really learned how to focus on a filly really because of her, because she was a big deal to our family. You know, we didn't know she'd do what she did, but we knew we liked her. And coming from a family that didn't have much at the time, it was really a blessing how it all worked out. But, you know, she stumbled at the gate in her start and pulled a shoe off and won by six, and that was history. You know, we sold her and helped our family, paid off a lot of our debts, and our lives are better because of her, and we rooted her on every single race.
But she stumbled again in the Black-Eyed Susan.
That was impressive.
Cut herself very badly. Happened to be back at the barn with Aaron after the race, and, boy, that thing was – it was ugly, but they got her fixed up. Were you with me that day?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It was wild.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful filly she. I loved her that day. I bet out on her that day. I didn't think she'd get beaten. And then when she stumbled,
I was the same way.
Loops the field. And what an awesome filly she was. And
you know, some of those good fillies, I've always said, find ways to get in a little trouble.
Yeah.
but you know, I spoke with Todd. Right when he acquired her, and you know, he was asking a lot of information, because you could tell she was bouncing around and doing what she likes to do. And you know, I think he did a fantastic job with her, and Aaron Wellman bought a nice racehorse.
Yeah, well, I think what you said, she was doing what she likes to do. I've always thought that fillies, they're a lot like women. You can't make them do anything. You got to let them do what they want to do. If you have good luck with fillies, you'll have good luck with women. You'll have a great relationship with your wife.
I just
you
do what I'm told.
There you go. Well, the fillies tell you what they want, and you got to do that. You cannot force them, and that's a great insight to have.
Absolutely.
You mentioned getting inside their heads. That was the advice you got from your dad. With fillies, you need to get inside their head. How do you go about doing that? You have to be some type of a horse
psychiatrist,
right? I still don't
know. I think I'm still guessing, but
yeah.
No.
What's the secret?
You tell me. there is no secret. It's I think every horse is a little different. They all have different personalities. You really have to, especially on the fillies, you really have to get to know them, what they like, you know, I've switched grooms before because I felt fillies really were not clicking with that groom. And sometimes it works, sometimes you just can't get it right. But, you know, I think you keep trying, you keep making very small, subtle changes that don't rattle any horses. And I think they either become accepting to you or what you did worked. But I don't have a secret.
You know, people are going to be listening to this and they're going to go, what are you talking about? A horse is a horse, right? Yeah. I mean, how can they have that much of a different personality between colts and fillies, but they are completely opposite, right?
Come groom one of my fillies that are 5/8 fit, and they'll tell the difference.
Yeah. I think any man that's had a date with a woman will tell you that they're not all the same. I mean, it's always funny to me, and this probably happens to you too. People say, "How do you tell your horses apart?" Oh, right? Sure. And like when you're raised on a farm, which I wasn't, but I mean, training horses for 20 years. What do you mean? How do you tell them apart? How do you tell one of your kids from the other one? I mean, it's like it's so bizarre, and people think that horses don't have personalities, and that's kind of a strange concept because every horse is different, just like every person is different. I mean, on the genome scale, there's like only six or seven of those little dots that are different between horses and humans, basically. So of course they have personalities and quirks, and you know, all horses. Well, Mike always harps on this on the radio because I always say, you know, you got to make them happy. That's like to me, that's like the whole key to training horses is having them smiling all the time. And if you can do that, you're going to win some races.
Oh, absolutely. And you have to be happy yourself. You know, one of my things I do for my therapy is I walk the barn when nobody else is around, usually late at night or after dinner. And being able to spot those personalities is much greater in a quiet barn, especially when they're not focusing on anything else. They're just focusing on you. And, you know, each one likes to be pet a certain way. Some don't like to be. Some like to be wrestled with a certain way. You know, it's that's probably one of my favorite times in the barn to recognize their personalities and try to get along with them. You think if you make them like you, they'll run better. but you know, they're all 100% different, even the colts. So.
George Strawbridge, I don't know if you saw it, but this week he said he told Flying Officer if he didn't win, he was going to go to the cavalry.
So. I might have made a few comments like that myself in my career.
Do they work?
Not usually. I think they're like my wife. She's going to do what they want to do anyway.
Which horse has presented you with your biggest challenge, Stephen?
In Landre. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, everything was a lot of pressure. Everything was a fight with her. You want to change one thing. You want to turn her around from a jog to a gallop. That was going to be a fight. You want to take her to the gate. That was going to be a fight. And, you know, my main goal every day was for it not to be a fight. And, you know, we just showed a lot of patience with her. I mean, I hot walked her. I groomed her myself. Just putting a bandage on was a fight with this filly. And I really think over a little time, she matured herself mentally to where all of those things weren't an issue. And, you know, I think she just, the class showed up, and obviously in her ability too.
Yeah. And you've told me before that that's probably the training job that you're most proud of, the way you brought her along.
Absolutely. I was one of the most difficult jobs I had. Especially since my father owned her. I don't know if any of you guys ever trained for an ex-trainer like, that knows what to ask and knows all the
I've worked with family. Does that count?
A family ex-trainer, yeah. It's well, we butted heads a few times. We'll put it that way.
I gave a horse to Tom Proctor one day. We were walking up to the track at Keeneland, and he turns to me and he goes, "I never thought I'd be training for you." but I'm like the best client in the world. I never call my trainers ever. You know, I just leave them alone. I mean, I don't give horses to guys or gals that I don't like or don't think know what they're doing. So I figure if they have something to say, they'll call me. I know what it's like to get those calls, and I don't want to bother anybody.
I've always told a few buddies of mine, if I that are the trainers at the track, if I ever hit the lottery, I'm going to give you all my horses and drive you nuts.
Yeah, that's good. I like that theory.
Talking with trainer Stephen Lister here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stephen, there's another horse that I know has to be special to you, and that's a horse by the name of My Perfect 10, who provided you with your very first stakes win.
Yeah, she was a nice filly. Actually, I have to credit Tanya Gunther for all of that. As a Robert Cudney owned, Tanya takes care of all of his horses. I actually have one in today for those guys. It's one of my best clients ever. Tanya's great. Very smart. She knows the game, knows where they belong. So basically she shipped this horse in, and good looking chestnut filly. I just sharp looking. Breezed her only once. She breezed a sharp half mile, and she looked at me and goes, I want to run in this stake. I'm sitting there, well, damn, there goes our win. You know, it's but, you know, she did. She had a good enough half mile. You know, we nominated her. We put her in and went off one of the long shots and just got a great trip. It was actually, I think it was Roberto Morales on that day. It was his first stakes win as a jockey, too. Oh, wow. And my first stakes win, and obviously the fillies. It was a good day. And but man, it was you know, the filly went into it great. She ran her big race, and you know, I got to have a little fun with her. I made my first start at Belmont Park with that filly. You know, got to fly up and experience that. You know, when you, as a trainer, that's what I was getting back to, of getting off the farm. It's fun to be able to go see those places and run in those graded races and do those type of things, and it keeps you hooked. Like, you keep coming back for it. You know, it might take 100 more horses to get there, but you know, it's a blast.
Yeah, I was down at Kentucky Downs and saw Al Stahl in the paddock, and he goes, I never win here, because I've started like 50 horses, I've never won a race here. So it, you know, you go to those places, and it might take, like you say, it might take a while to win one.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but eventually you will. And that's kind of like what Mike and I do flying around the country, you know, to all these big races, and nobody ever feels sorry for us if we lose our bags or anything, because we're going to the Derby, we're going to the Belmont, we're going to California, we're going to Florida in the wintertime when it's snowing here. I mean, all of those things, you know, are so much fun. Like you say, if you're into the game, there's nothing like it, and
oh,
it's super exciting to run a horse out of town. I think nothing beats that, really.
Oh yeah.
And you'll ship out of town, and you'll run outside of the state of Kentucky.
Oh yeah, I mean, the winners we've shipped to, 2 years ago we went to Oaklawn, last year went to Fairgrounds. I have clients pulling me all directions this year, so we haven't really found out where we're going this year, but we're considering Florida and keeping a few horses back here. I won't mind Florida at all. Trust
yeah.
me. It,
yeah, I don't blame you.
About 15 pounds on a New Orleans last year, so it, if I had to skip that, it'd probably be good for me. But
you didn't make a trip to Bourbon Street, did you?
Oh, during the day only. But you know, I go to bed too early for Bourbon Street. But it was a fun town. I've on the East Coast running about every state that I can think of. You know, have fun doing it. It's a lot of fun to get out and go.
Talk about that a minute, like the extra pressure that's put on you. I've you know, in my career, I was in California, so it's like a island. I mean, you go track to track, you're never that far from home. But trainers on the East Coast, they're running all over the place and usually have more than one stable. Mm-hmm. And talk about that, how you balance that, how that works when you have 2-3 stables in different locations, and how your logistics are involved.
Well, usually you spend your day reading your charts, and then before dinner you read charts, and after dinner tell my wife I'll be to bed soon, start reading charts. You know,
what are you looking for when you're reading the charts?
Really just my charts that I write down of what, keeping track of the daily activities of all the horses, where they are, what they're doing, what they did last race. You know, I usually try to stay away from, you know, if I ship a horse to Belmont Park, I'm probably not going to try to ship that horse again back to Belmont Park or somewhere further. You know, I try not to, I try to keep my horses fresh, and, you know, I think that van ride can be a little tricky sometimes when it comes to that. Going back to my team, my help, all the way back to your veterinarians that make it easy for you, whoever you work with best, know as there's so many different medication rules in each state, you know, they are there to help you with that, and they do help you with that. Keep track of it down to my brother that's going to get them there. And, you know, everything has to fall into place. I mean, even your family to take care of home, to be able to go to those places and do all those things. And, I mean, there's a million different, I mean, owner's license, trainer's license. It's
different from state to state, right? You have to apply for a license. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the issues facing thoroughbred racing today, of course, but there's so many things that go on behind the scenes. People just show up to the racetrack. They see you saddle a horse. They see the horse go out and run. Hopefully it wins. And that's all they think a trainer does.
There's a lot of things that have to happen. You know, from my experience looking back on it, I feel like 20% of my day is training horses. You know, the rest is all the logistics of it. So,
yeah, that's the biggest bugaboo is all the things you have to do. And do you have a secretary or do you do that on your own?
I have an accountant. She takes care of most of that. I just hired her this year, and it's like I have a life again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when that, I mean, it takes up so much of your time, and whatever she can do in 30 minutes takes me 3 hours. But
well, because your phone's always ringing.
She might be a faster typer too. But you know, it's just like any other business. You know, there's a million things that have to go on for it to be successful, and you know, it's not just putting a saddle on a horse. A little more complicated than that.
Yeah, and that's what I always tell trainers that ask me for advice. I always tell them, take care of the business end, you mm-hmm. know, because I was not into the business end at all. I was into the horses 100%, you know, and I let the business end go, much to my chagrin. I mean, it was not a good thing. And it wasn't until later in my training career when I actually got an accountant and that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's so many things involved business-wise that you have to take care of, or you won't be training horses very well.
I had to learn that the hard way as well. I was lucky enough to recover from it. But it is a very difficult thing, especially if you don't have anybody showing you or teaching you. Or you know, my father was great with teaching me the horse stuff. But, you know, all that kind of stuff, I just learned on my own. You know, I went and got textbooks at Barnes & Noble and I tried to educate myself. I don't know how well I did. But, you know, it's a huge part. It's probably the major part of being a successful horse trainer is the business end of it.
No question.
Steven Lister here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So often we've had the chance to visit, not just on this program, but all of our shows, with trainers who are, like you, born and raised here in the state, and they're based here throughout much of the year. But because of the situation that Kentucky Racing is facing and the purses not being very strong outside of Keeneland, they're forced to go out of town when they would much rather stay here and just race in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Is that like that for you as well? Would you rather be based here and just run here as opposed to having a ship?
Oh, absolutely. It would make life easy. Yeah. There's, you know, we find ourselves traveling a lot and owners spending a lot more money in van bills. You know, usually after Churchill ends, there's a stretch in the summer, right? I've, for the past couple of years, lost about 15% of my horses all to New York. And that's tough. You know, you keep telling yourself that, you know, I might as well just move to New York, but, you know, just sticking to my guns, I try to stay here. Eventually, if we get big enough, which I would like to, have a string up there, and have two working strings. I mean, that would be wonderful, but, you know, if it stays like I am, I'll be happy too. But, it does make life a little more difficult that you can't just concentrate and stay in Kentucky and know the horses, know the circuit, know the people. Makes it easier to win races when you can spot your horses correctly.
Yeah. What's the key to doing that?
The best hops to drop, right? You know, just got to put them in the right spot.
Yeah. How many horses would you like to have if you could?
I tell my wife every day, I either want to have get down to 5 horses or have 80, you know, one of the two. You know, keeping 25 to 30, it's the same. If I feel like it might be the same thing as 80. It's a full-time gig. You have to be fully concentrated on. It takes up all of your day. But, you know, it's a comfortable number. You know, I usually, most of the year, I have a split string, which with just 30 horses. It's tough to get, especially in Kentucky, that many stalls in one area at a single time. So I feel like you're basically doing a lot of things that the big trainers are doing anyway. So,
yeah, it used to be totally against the norm to have horses off the track. Mm-hmm. And then little by little, you know, if you're going to train 300 head of horses, you're going to have them somewhere else. Nobody's going to give you 300 stalls. They might give you 50 stalls or something, but they're not going
to. Sometimes I prefer the training center so the racing secretary doesn't give me a bad phone call.
Well, that's true too. You know,
I've made a few of those guys mad in my day. But...
Well, if you don't, you're not doing your job.
That's 100% correct. Yeah.
Just another element of being a horse trainer. There's another aspect that you need to worry about, and you need to learn how to work with the different racing secretaries around the country, and that differs most of the time from circuit to circuit or even from track to track.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to get along. You got to know all your racing secretaries. You got to get your stalls. If you don't have stalls, you don't have business in a lot of cases. So there's a lot of things that have to happen to be successful.
Stephen Lister, we're coming up on the final 3 minutes of the program, and this has been an hour that has just flown by. I want to thank you for being here with us. Always like to kind of wrap up by asking trainers to tell us something about themselves that people might not know. Maybe some other hobbies, some other interests that you enjoy outside of horse racing.
I really don't have many hobbies. It takes up all your time.
Typical horse trainer. Typical answers. One of these times somebody's going to say something other than I like to golf.
Well, God, I was going there a second. But I'm an awful golfer.
You're in good company.
I mean, you're the best. I wish I had something for you.
Yeah, no, one of these days somebody's going to say they're a stamp collector or something. We'll probably keel over.
Reed Baker told us that he raises show chickens. And that's his big thing.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's, and he's a former lobster delivery guy, too, by the way. So, yeah, he has other interests.
Lobster so fast, you freak?
Yeah.
I tell you what, if I'll work on that. And if I'm lucky enough to be asked back, I'll give you one.
People can follow you on social media. You have a Twitter account.
Absolutely, yeah.
At Lister Stable.
At Lister Stable. You know, Facebook, websites, I try to hit every end of it, but you know, I probably should be a little more up to date on it. We'll go fix the website today, as we talked about. But
yeah, if you missed the website address, by the way, and I'm going to give it out because it will be updated shortly. Because now I'm putting you on the spot. StephenListerRacing.com and at Lister Stable on Twitter are the places you can get in touch with Stephen here and send him a couple of horses, and he'll take care of you.
Absolutely, Guys, thank you for having me on. It's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. One quick, how big is that social media now? Being a younger guy, 30 years old, how big is that?
Oh, it's huge. You know, everybody wants to know what you're doing. Everybody wants to see the horses. You know, it's so quickly to be out of sight, out of mind. It's so easy to do that. And, you know, you try to prevent that because all the other trainers will be. So you got to be on top of it. You got to get out, shake hands. You got to have people feel like they know you. Because I feel like most of the people who have horses with me just truly like me. I don't think it's anything fantastic that I've done. So, got to.
Stephen Lister here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Stephen, really enjoyed it. Been a delight. Continued success. Keep it rolling.
Yeah, guys. Thank you.
All right. Wow. Fun hour.
Yeah, it was great.
Don't forget, if you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Podcast will be available for you there, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, as we do each and every week with this show and all of our programs. They're all there, horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guest, Stephen Lister, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pennon. We'll talk to you next time right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.